If you bark, meow, quack, whinny, or have someone in the house that does, this is the talk show for you. It's the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS.
We're back here on the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show, and we have with us on the line Scott Carter, the Chief Life Sciences Officer at the Detroit Zoo. Welcome to the show, Mr. Carter.
Thanks very much. Happy to be here.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you. Scott, if I can call you that, can you tell us what a Chief Life Sciences Officer does?
Sure. I'm the head of the all of the life sciences programs, which is animal care, animal welfare, animal health, conservation. So all of our programs that have to do with the well-being of individuals here at the zoo or the well-being of species in nature.
I got you. So you're kind of the arm that kind of sets up what gets done, how it gets done, or do you actually organize the staff to get it accomplished?
I'm over the staff. There's about 80 people in life sciences here. I'm kind of the executive position over all of that. So the department heads who report to me are the ones who are really, you know, organizing people and getting things done.
Wow, interesting. So in other words, you've got to make sure that every animal in the zoo is getting the proper care and the proper maintenance in order to keep them in peak condition throughout all the seasons, if I understand you correctly.
That's right. I'm responsible for ensuring that all the animals that live here have, you know, have everything they need, the diet they need, the vet care they need, the husbandry care they need, and also that they have all the habitat that they need to ensure that they have good welfare.
And one thing that's pertinent to today's conversation, obviously, you guys are the expert at keeping these animals in a thriving situation, but on our show are two rescues, one with bears and one with cats and other large cat animals. Also, I remember your zoo took a proactive stance at getting involved in a broker situation where there was a broker that was definitely doing things that nobody really appreciated or approved of, and you had to step in and help out. Can you tell us a little bit more about that journey?
Well, we've been active in issues of animal welfare for many years, and many times for us, our involvement in issues of animal welfare outside our gates involves exotic animals that are held as pets. Often they've been confiscated by law enforcement or other agencies, and they need a home. Because they've been illegally held, or they've been confiscated because they were in danger. Their welfare was compromised, sure, or they were actually in danger. We've taken in a number of animals here. We've also been involved in placing animals in sanctuaries if we can. And many times we're called to help in situations in which we just can't help. I mean, particularly with issues of pet reptiles, for example. We get calls weekly. Mm-hmm. On people who want to, you know, find a new home for their iguana that's gotten too big,
sure,
or their turtles or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And many of those cases, we can't take in all those animals, and we have to try to refer them to someone else who can help them. Where we can, we try to help, and we try to help in those cases where there really aren't other places to turn, like with bears and lions and tigers and things like that.
Well, where do you see the line as far as what makes an appropriate pet for the general consumer and what doesn't make an appropriate pet?
Well,
to prevent these kind of situations that you guys find yourself in on an ongoing basis, where's the line? Is there a line, or is
there is a line. I'm not sure it's a straight line.
Okay.
But certainly large exotic animals, especially potentially dangerous animals, should not be kept as pets.
Okay, okay.
Lions, tigers, wild cats, certainly venomous reptiles. We believe those animals should never be kept as pets.
Right, right, right.
We believe that primates, for example, which can certainly inflict harm on people, often will live for years in horrible conditions, and for their own welfare, they shouldn't be kept as pets. People simply can't meet the needs of a social primate. Another issue that, and this has been primarily the issue with many of the reptile calls we get, is people aren't prepared to provide for an animal's care for its whole life.
Right.
Animals can live a long time.
Iguana would be a perfect example. You know, that's one animal.
They get very big.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we commonly encourage people, if they're appropriate pet keepers, to go into things like a bearded dragon, but we haven't literally sold an iguana now for over 15 years. And it's the same exact scenario that you're talking about. Why get an animal in captivity that's going to outsize his cage, his environment? Who's going to dedicate an entire room or area just for one particular animal? It just doesn't happen.
Yeah, and that's exactly how we see it as well. We get iguana calls weekly, usually multiple calls weekly from someone who, my iguana has gotten too big, will the zoo take it? Turtles are another great example.
Mm-hmm.
Often, not that they've gotten too big, but that, I mean, they live such a long time.
Yes.
A child grows up and they go off to college and their mother is left with a turtle that she either doesn't want or doesn't know how to take care of.
Yeah, and the other thing with something like an aquatic turtle is you really have to remember that, you know, their needs are substantially more than maybe even a small land turtle. You know, they, you know, either one, you have that same issue. They live a very, very long time.
Yeah.
But a lot of times the most affordable turtle is a water turtle, and it's actually the most long-term, most maintenance unfriendly that you might get.
Yes.
So let's. I want to at least make a quick mention, because your zoo did take a very active role in a particular broker situation down in Texas where it looked like all things were going wrong, and there was a huge number of animals that had to be rescued. And from what I hear, your zoo stepped up big and tried to actually play that role so that there's animals could be taken care of and taken care of properly. Is that true?
Yes, that's true. When we were notified of the impending seizure by local authorities in Arlington on this broker's business, we sent staff to Texas. I had staff people in Texas from the middle of December until the end of February who simply stepped in when all the animals were confiscated, and 27,000 animals were taken from the dealer's facility.
Wow.
To an off-site facility and had to be set up, thousands and thousands of separate enclosures, water filtration systems. I mean, huge, huge undertaking. We sent staff down there and had staff down there for over 2 months. And then when the case, of course the dealer challenged it, and a court trial had to take place. And during that time, I kept staff there, along with volunteers from all over the country. A number of organizations sent volunteers in to help provide care for these animals.
Sure.
At the conclusion of the trial, the animals were not sent back to the dealer, and had homes had to be found for those animals all over the place.
And that was like 27,000 animals.
27,000 animals were actually seized. A number of those animals did not live, you know, through this whole period.
Well, it's good that the zoo stepped up and took a charge.
Right.
That's fantastic. Real quick on my notes here, can you tell us a little bit about Amphibianville or Amphibiville? You've got something down here at the zoo, and I'd like to actually highlight some of the activities you have right there at the zoo. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Amphibiville, the National Amphibian Conservation Center, we opened 10 years ago, and we are still the only zoo who has a facility of this size dedicated just to amphibians. We identified, you know, there was a global crisis coming for wild amphibians a long time ago. People working in the field knew this was coming, and by this, obviously, we mean chytrid fungus.
Yep. Yeah, we actually had as a topic on our show. One of the MSU students was in and actually had quite a bit of experience on that particular fungus. So our listening audience, for those who have following us regularly, understand about the chytrid problem.
Great.
So go ahead.
Great. Anyway, so we began the focus of the National Amphibian Conservation Center, and the setting that we have it in, the wetlands and the area around, is what we call Amphibiville. With the idea of being a place that would focus on amphibian conservation, we could bring in people who could do some focused work on amphibian conservation. It grew into, you know, really kind of focused work on amphibian disease, for example. And we did this in a setting where people come in and see amphibians, a building that's nothing but amphibians. And most zoos, you know, have a building that's dedicated to reptiles and amphibians. And most people, I think, don't know the difference.
Fantastic.
Wow. Thank you.
Well, Scott, thank you so much for sharing this information with us about what the zoo is doing. We really appreciate your coming on the show.
You're very welcome. Thanks.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And Rick, once again, we've just had a terrific show. What great information we learned from some great different animals that most people don't have a lot of exposure to. So it was really informative, and I just can't encourage people to listen to it enough. If you did miss part of the show and you want to go back and listen, you can go to our website at www.1320wils.com, and you can listen either live or you can listen to previous shows, or if you want to, you can email us at mmpets@1320wils.com and send us your comments. We'd really love to hear it. So in the meantime, on behalf of our producer, Holly Rotter, and my partner, Rick Pruse, this is Lee Cohen saying, please, please, please take good care of your pets. And in the meantime, have a great weekend, and we'll see you next weekend. Have a good one.